Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to podcast number 7 from musictechnology.net.
That's MuseTech, or not MuseTech, or it is MuseTech.
It is MuseTech.
MuseTech.net.
I'm Joe Pizzano. I'm along with my good friend and fellow radio engineer here,
Darren Morton.
And today we decided we're going to talk a little bit about live sound reinforcement. In particular, what we do for our setups at the Fine Arts Center, the Pew Fine Arts Center. We just had a jazz concert a couple days ago.
Yes.
Thought it went really well.
Excellent show.
We had almost 700 people at the concert, which is great because that's all we can fit in there. And it was almost standing room only. That's what I like to see when I look out. And
The fire marshal told me it was a good show.
as long as the fire marshal's okay with it. But, you know, we have a pretty large auditorium. We have a gigantic stage. And we record. We have live sound reinforcement. We record to multi-track, direct to two-track. In addition, we send it out to the radio, which you mm-hmm. send out to the world.
Yes, we did. And we had a really good mix this year. I was really happy with it. Very few things I would change. We just had a spectacular year. So it's one of those neat things where the performance was great, the technology was great, and it just kind of all came together. One gorgeous accident.
One gorgeous accident. And hopefully we'll be able to replicate that in about 3 months, right?
We'll have another accident.
One of the things that you might be wondering is what exactly do we do to mic an ensemble that big? And many times you might go to a high school show or just any show regularly, and you'll see sound guy or girl out there in the audience, and they got a couple mics wound back to an incredibly old mixer. And mm-hmm. and sometimes it sounds great, and sometimes it sounds awful. And a lot of that has to do with the sound engineer and what they do up front getting ready for that. One of the things I can tell you that we do on stage is we have a number of microphones, mostly are specifically used for sound reinforcement. For me, particularly as the ensemble director, I want to house the sound as good as it possibly can. Then I worry about the recording. And that might sound backwards to you, but people are coming to a live event. That's what we want it to sound good at. And if for some reason the tape doesn't sound as great as possible, we can come back later and record all by ourselves without the audience there.
And the recording industry, the phrase nowadays is, we'll fix it in Pro Tools.
We'll fix it in Pro Tools.
Now, which means it doesn't have to sound good on the front end because we can fix it using DigiDesign's Pro Tools program, which is kind of the industry standard in recording studios.
Pro Tools is DigiDesign's, right? Now, how does Avid, did they do that? Were they Pro Tools or was that someone else?
DigiDesign is Avid and Pro Tools. Now, I haven't looked lately.
Okay, you never know.
The names could be changing. But
it's possible Apple owns them now.
Apple pretty much owns everything.
Yeah, pretty much. Bill
Gates. All running on a Linux kernel now, right?
That's right. Well, let me tell you a little bit about what we do. Basically, we don't mic every instrument. We don't close mic every instrument, but I would say we get about 80% of them. We run in the front, we have 5 saxophones, and we run 3 microphones for them. We have one that splits the altos, one that splits the tenors, and one on the berry itself. The trombones, we have 4 or 5 trombones depending upon them. We use 3 microphones for them, 3 microphones for the trumpets. The guitar player, we use a direct in. And we also use an online amp. And the same thing with the bass player. And we basically do a 3 mic technique for the set. We have 2 overheads and we have a kick drum on that. And we use 2 mics for the piano. And then, of course, we have a vocalist who has their own wire. That's the only wireless microphone we use. I'm not a fan of having too many wirelesses because of the point of failure for those. And also because sometimes, the batteries just quit in the middle of things. So we go wired on everything except for the vocals that we have.
And the very best and the most expensive wireless mic, I don't care how good the capsule is or how expensive the wireless unit is, will still never sound the same as a wire directly into the console.
Absolutely.
It's an amazing convenience, but you can crash an entire show in a hurry with a wireless mic.
Absolutely. And that's, of course, another reason why we do that as well, which I've learned from you, by the way.
No, thank you.
With that. And we're going to talk a little bit about the specifics of the mics in a little bit. But we also use we also have 5 monitor mixes we use on stage. They're discrete monitor mixes. They're completely separate. We can route whatever microphones we want into them. We have 2 solo microphones that we use. Each one of those spots have their own monitor mix. Then the piano player has their own monitor. The drum player has their own monitor. And believe it or not, we put a monitor for the trumpet section because they're just far enough behind people that they can't hear the saxophones on the big stage. They can't hear the soloists on the big stage. And if you can't hear the soloists and you can't hear the saxophones, mm-hmm. it can create a back and forth effect that we don't want.
And most trumpet players are deaf too, you know.
Well, I know. what you say, I can't hear you. Yeah. I can speak up a little bit. So what I thought maybe we could talk about, Darren, is what mics do we use? I know what we use, but can you mm-hmm. tell us a little bit why we use those mics for those particular instruments?
Well, first and foremost, when you put a group together, they have to be able to play together. They've got
Absolutely.
To be able to mix. If the guy out front, being you in this case, can't get the group to mix right acoustically to his ears, I don't care what you do with the PA system, you can't fix it.
Absolutely. I've always said this, that the director of whatever ensemble it is the primary mixer of that group.
Exactly.
Even in sound reinforcement situations.
Now, you can fall back to, well, vocalists are probably going to need sound reinforcement no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But in a group such as yourself and in the room, if you're looking at it from a live sound point of view, first off, you have to address what's going on in the room.
Absolutely.
And in the case up there, what we use on the trumpets is pulled down quite a bit as far as mics because the trumpets carry in the room nicely and they fill the room out. So you first have to start with what's there and what isn't there when you address the room.
Sure. And then, you know, one of the things I tell my trumpet players is they kind of, you know, they are trumpets. They're meant to be loud.
Oh, yeah.
It's called a trumpet for a reason.
And it sounds better the harder you push it.
That's right. And if you overblow the trumpet, you really can't.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I tell them. Although there is something called blasting, but that's for another story.
That's
so what microphones are we going to think about when we use the trumpets?
It depends also on the usage. But in the trumpets, something that works really nicely on trumpets are decent quality standard dynamic microphones. A dynamic has a transformer in it. It is a passive device. Doesn't require phantom power if you're familiar with that. They work. They're not that sensitive. Well, guess what? A trumpet's
they
putting
don't need
out,
to be.
Yeah, exactly. You know, a trumpet blasting, what, 120 dB?
Yeah, more.
Or high?
More at the bell.
Yeah.
Right.
Brother Pizzano here has studied these things.
Especially if I'm playing it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I can attest to that. But that's a subject for another podcast / rant. Anyway.
There we go. Here we go.
Yeah. So, fundamentally, we want a mic that sounds good, of course, but you want it out in front of the trumpets, which are loud, loud instruments. A condenser microphone, it's going to be more sensitive and more accurate. We're speaking in very broad terms here. But
we're painting with a wide brush here.
Exactly. So a dynamic mic, a good dynamic mic will work great. And if you want to get into brand specific, something that will always work is the Vulnerable or Venerable. Venerable?
Yes. Venerable? Venerable. Venerable sounds good. Venerable. I know
what
you're
going to. How about the
old
standby? I like it. And the
SM57. SM57, absolutely.
World's greatest around, $79 microphone.
I was going to say. And then, of course, there's the 58, which has also been around, but, you know.
But basically, you want a decent quality dynamic mic. Now, and if we were direct miking each instrument, something with a really tight pattern, like a super cardioid, mm-hmm. Would work better.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, we're using 2 to 3 mics spaced across the trumpets. And the trumpets are all instructed to. They play at the mics.
Right. Absolutely.
Until they're doing the choreography, which
Brother Pizzano here is good for. Sometimes it's hard to play into the mic when your trumpets are swinging around.
That's what the pan button is invented for.
Now, the trombone, similar, right? Very similar type of setup for them. Now, I know on the saxophones, we use different microphones.
Correct.
What do we use for those? What's the best idea for miking those guys?
Well, on a saxophone, you don't have that initial transient, that blast mm-hmm. right off the front end on the attack of the note. Dynamics, if you're direct miking, a lot of dynamics sound great, like a Sennheiser 421 sounds mm-hmm. spectacular in the bell of a sax. Well, in our case, we're miking the section, so we are using a pretty decent quality condenser mic, and we're keeping them up on the stands pointed down into the bells.
Right, because the sound comes up and out.
Right, and the trombones are directly behind the saxes, so we're trying to get the trombones off axis
right.
with those mics. So those mics come up over their music stands.
We use fronts. They're kind of low.
Yeah,
they're not
yeah.
like stands like you would think of. So the microphone's not as high as you might be thinking of if you're visualizing this.
Correct, so it doesn't look too out of place, but it's
right.
up, and the mic stand, the boom arm comes down, and the mic elements are pointed down. In that case, we're using a pretty decent quality condenser mic.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to the less expensive condenser end, some of the cheaper large diaphragm condenser mics mm-hmm. that you see. You flip through the pages of the cheapo catalogs, you find all these Chinese made. They'll work.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, well, there's all kind of
and
microphones out there that you know, I get asked this question a lot in my technology class. Well, what's better, a condenser microphone or a dynamic microphone? And everyone, including including us, like to paint things in a broad term and be able to say, mm-hmm. this is better than this. Truth of the matter is, it really depends on the application.
Completely.
It really does. The best condenser microphone may be better than the best dynamic microphone if you're doing an apples-to-apples comparison, maybe. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of condenser microphones that don't sound as good as some of the higher-end dynamic microphones, and they have different
Correct.
Applications.
And if you're in a live sound context, the world's greatest condenser microphone may feed back like a stuck pig.
Right, because maybe it was designed for recording only.
It's very sensitive. It has a very, very open cardioid pattern. In the studio, microphones are viewed more like crayons. Mm. I mean, there's some general rules you follow. You don't put a 50-year-old RCA ribbon microphone directly in front of the world's loudest trumpet player. but they're viewed more as crayons. In a live sound setting, sometimes you have to make a compromise.
Absolutely.
You may have to go to a different condenser mic that has a tighter pattern to pick something out of the mix, or you may have to go completely to a dynamic mic with a really tight pattern to get what you want. It is a bit of a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, the conductor... Mm-hmm. Maybe stand out in the front and go, man, that sounds horrible. And the sound guys went, hey, but I can get them up. I can make people hear them. And you have to find a way to pacify, the fellow who's out
That's
front.
Right. Well, one time, not to talk about people, but I'm going to talk about some people here. We've had Doc Severson up a number of times. You and I both got to become
Amazing
friends
guy.
With him.
And, Amazing guy.
And one time he brought this new sound guy up. Do you remember this story? The sound guy got here about 3 hours before Doc and his band, and he said all these things up, and Doc turned the things on, and he come flying up to the booth, and he says, I don't want any more electrified sound
yep.
going on. He said, turn it all off.
Yep.
And he was right. It sounded better once,
yep.
once he took that off.
Again, acoustically, it's got to work.
It's got to work.
First acoustically.
That's right. A couple other things. I know we're getting ready to wind down here. Let's talk about the direct inboxes mm-hmm. and why, when we use a direct inbox, I still like to have amps on stage. One thing is with the direct inbox, of course, the sound goes up to the sound mixer up there. And, mm-hmm. of course, the direct inbox is a great thing for getting rid of interference. Has great properties for that. But a lot of times you'll see someone on the stage just jack into a direct inbox, and then the sound guy sends it out to the house.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is the band no longer can hear it. Even
uh-huh.
if you have, and, of course, the player, they're used to having that amp right next to them. They hear
yeah.
it. It can mess up the entire concert. So what we do is we do both. Take the direct inbox, split it out. We have the amps on stage, and then, of course, the sound mixer has control for the house
that. If you're a guitar player, the amplifier is 50% of your tone. Bass players over the years have gotten a little bit more flexible as far as DI boxes and their own amplification. And there are bass players, if you want to talk notably, Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers in the studio typically walks in with a good direct box and his favorite bass, plugs it in, and everything else is done there. He's not using an amp in the studio. But
right.
guitar players, the amp is part of your sound.
Well,
and
you know, if you use an upright bass, it makes volume by itself too, where an electric guitar in particular doesn't.
Nope.
It's not loud
whatsoever.
Enough to hear anything.
So, and then there's also the compromise there too. The guitar player, if he's using a tube amp, he's going to have a sweet spot where that amp sounds correct to him. Well, that sweet spot may be 130 decibels. So you have to find that compromise. But usually we'll mic up the guitar. Now, there are a lot of really neat boxes, the pods, the POD boxes from Line 6. They make some really neat stuff just to jack in. And you've got a little plastic box, and you're off to the PA system with that. No amp required. And you can get close tonally, but you're still not right there. As we're running low on time, do we want to do a two-parter here?
Sure, why not?
Let's
do a two-parter. So, we are out of time. So, this is part one, episode 7, and we're talking about mic techniques, and we're talking about miking bands. So, we will continue this in part two. For now, I'm Joe Pizzano.
I'm Darren Morton.
We'll catch you next time.